Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. Votes are still being counted in California, but we are getting a much better sense of what happened on Election Day. Donald Trump has just over 76.5 million votes. Kamala Harris has almost 74 million votes. It has been two decades since a Republican won the popular vote. Republicans have also won the House and Senate. In 2020, President Biden got 81 million votes. So that means Kamala Harris got 7 million fewer votes than Biden. But overall, close to 90 million people did not vote this time, according to U.S. News and World Report. 90 million. So how did this happen? Why don't more people vote in this country? And why are Democrats losing to some of the most extreme Republicans we've ever seen? Joining us for the hour is Robert Reich, co-founder of Inequality Media Civic Action, writer at robertreich.substack.com, author of many books, including The System, Who Rigged It, How to Fix It, Chancellor's Professor of Public Policy at UC Berkeley, and former Labor Secretary under Bill Clinton. Hi, Professor Reich. Thank you so much for joining us again.
Well, good morning, Rose.
Well, Professor Reich, as you know, there are so many takes out there about how this happened. You've been on the show many times, and we talk about how when you look at the policies, whether it's raising the minimum wage, taxing the ultra wealthy, healthcare for all, the percentages are so high, and the people are really in line with some Democrats. Not every Democrat is in favor of healthcare for all, but you know what I mean. So when you think about that, and then you think about Donald Trump and some of these other Republicans who are the most openly racist, sexist, xenophobic people we've ever seen, how do you explain what happened on election night?
Well, I don't have a simple explanation, Rose, but I do think that it has a lot to do with a kind of deep and abiding frustration that many Americans have been feeling for years with our government and our system. And by that I mean that beginning in, probably 2008 with the financial crisis, many Americans began seeing the system as faulty in a very fundamental way, that corruption legalized bribery, and the rigging of the system had made it almost impossible for average Americans to do better, no matter how hard they worked, no matter how much they played by the rules. It seemed like the game was rigged in favor of the people at the top. And so for years, I've been hearing from people in the middle of America, but also in North Carolina, where I was doing some work preparing a book years ago, I guess it was 2015, and in Michigan and Wisconsin and Pennsylvania, many of the states that went for Donald Trump, but had been before then Democratic states. I was hearing over and over again people say, oh, well, I want somebody who's going to shake the system up. I don't want the status quo. I don't want business as usual. And I think this is very, very fundamental, Rose. The median wage of the bottom 90% is stuck. It's basically, if you adjust for inflation, it's stuck where it was almost 40, 45 years ago. Most Americans have not really had a raise in terms of their living standards, in terms of their capacity to live better. Meanwhile, most of the gains from the economy have gone to the top. And there is a wider and wider gap between college graduates, people who particularly have graduated from prestigious or high thought of universities, even public universities like University of California, Berkeley, that I'm privileged to be associated with, a gap between those people, those graduates, and the people who have never graduated from college. And that's about 65% of Americans have never graduated from a four-year college. And that gap continues to widen in terms of income and wealth and opportunity and status. And so when Donald Trump comes along and says the game is rigged, and this is what he said in 2016, and he said it again in even more vicious tones in 2024. The game is rigged against you, and I'm going to be your voice. I'm your savior. I'm going to make it possible for you to do better. People want to hear that, and I think the Democrats for years have basically not been saying that. They have not talked about widening inequality. They have not talked about what's happening to the majority of Americans. They sound like they are defending the status quo. Now, I don't think Joe Biden really did that. I think Joe Biden was history will judge, to be a very, very good president who revived antitrust and was a strong supporter of labor unions and made major investments in this country. But nonetheless, I think when it came to it, most of America really did want somebody who was going to shake the system to the core.
Can you give us a sense, Professor Reich, who ultimately is in charge of the Democratic Party at this point? Because I think about Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, who says when you really look at the Democratic Party, it could be up to five parties because you have so many different factions. You've got the Joe Manchin, for example, who just greatly watered down Build Back Better, which then turned into the Inflation Reduction Act. And there were so many good policies in Build Back Better. I keep thinking about Medicare expanding to cover dental, hearing, and vision, which is widely popular in this country, and it's just hardly talked about. And then you have Bernie Sanders, who immediately slammed the Democrats, saying that they have abandoned the working class. So are you still in touch with the top leaders of the Democratic Party? How are they thinking about this? Because I've listened to a lot of Democrats, and they're just not saying anything that would make you think they're going to make any big changes beyond the Bernie wing of the party.
Well, I think this is an important point, Rose, because the Democratic Party, in terms of the structure of the party and the so-called leadership of the party, is still very much drinking at the same troughs as the Republican Party in terms of campaign finance, in terms of money. I mean, where is the big money going? It's going both to the Republicans and to the Democrats. And as long as a party is dependent on big corporate money or the money of the wealthy for its campaigns, that party is not going to bite the hands that feed them. You see, the underlying problem for the Democrats, and it's the same thing really for the Republicans, although we can talk about what's happened to the Republican Party. The establishment Republican Party is sort of in a crazed situation right now. The establishment Democratic Party doesn't know what to do because it doesn't want to give up its sources of funding. And Rose, ultimately, you have to do that. If you're going to critique the system in a way that the system needs to be critiqued, you've got to look at the power of big corporations and also big money, wealthy individuals. I mean, Elon Musk exemplifies the problem in this country. I mean, since Election Day, he has become $70 billion richer since Election Day. Because the stock value of many of his companies has increased because investors say, well, after Trump, he's going to be richer. The company is going to get even more contracts from the government. There are going to be even fewer investigations of Elon Musk's various enterprises. Well, you see the problem there. The fundamental problem is that both parties are entrenched with regard to big wealth and big corporations. The only way we are going to rescue not only the Democratic Party, but most importantly, the middle and working classes of America, is and do anything that people want. I mean, you talked about drugs and healthcare, but also minimum wage, increasing the minimum wage, family and medical leave, paid family and medical leave, providing people with the resources they need and the safety nets and the education they need to navigate this new economy. The only way we're going to do that is if we get taxes increased on the super wealthy, and we also make sure that the monopolies are broken up that have kept prices very high. Now, what I'm saying to you and your listeners, Rose, is not something that a lot of Democrats want to talk about. I mean, Bernie Sanders is one of the exceptions, and I admire Bernie enormously. And he ran for president. I was behind him. Elizabeth Warren has said much of this. But the major winners of the Democratic Party, that is, in terms of getting nominations for president and being Democrats that are acceptable to the moneyed elites of the party, they are not saying this because, again, they don't want to insult and they don't want to cause any fear among those moneyed elites.
To your point, Professor Reich, last week we talked about Senator Sanders' statement saying it should come as no great surprise that a Democratic Party, which has abandoned working class people, would find that the working class has abandoned them. DNC Chair Jamie Harris took to Twitter to call what Senator Sanders said, quote, straight up BS. Former Speaker Nancy Pelosi told the New York Times that she respects Sanders, but does not respect him for saying that. Hakeem Jeffries was on a couple of shows. And to be honest, with respect, it was word salad. I mean, he just basically said the Democrats need to talk about attaining the American dream. I mean, you didn't really hear any deep dives as to why this happened. And so, Professor Reich, I'm wondering, can you give us some insights about how decisions are made? Because The Independent has a piece that says, centrist Democrats are taking it from all sides, humiliated with a 7 swing state sweep after successfully talking Kamala Harris into abandoning the progressive-ish agenda she championed in her 2020 bid for the White House. Those centrists spent the past few months stating plainly that she would not be a meaningful departure from the presidency of Biden, with whom Harris could not identify a single issue on which she disagreed. Instead, she campaigned with Liz Cheney and sought out moderate Republicans in states like Pennsylvania and Wisconsin. So there's so many hot takes out there, Professor Reich. Can you give us some insights? How are these decisions made? Because you did have Kamala Harris in 2020 saying she supports Medicare for all. This time around, you know, she talked about things like, and of course, this is so important, that new Medicare benefits would apply to home care. That barely got any attention. And then, of course, drug pricing changes, but did not come out and say she supports Medicare for all. So how are these decisions made?
Well, your question suggests, Rose, that there is a small number of people that are making all these decisions, and that's not true. What's happened to the Democratic Party and the pre-Trump Republican Party, that is the establishment parties, is that they are basically fundraising machines. They adopt the values of Wall Street and big corporations and very wealthy individuals who support the enterprise. And I'm not surprised. I mean, follow the money. Always follow the money. Always look where the sources of financing are coming from. I am a huge fan, and I mean this quite sincerely, of Nancy Pelosi. I think she's a brilliant, brilliant politician. I think Hakeem Jeffries is exactly right for the job he is in. I think that Kamala Harris did a wonderful job in the very, very short, truncated campaign she had. Her debate performance against Donald Trump was the best debate performance I've ever seen in a presidential debate. But ultimately, these people are limited, or they feel limited in what they can do and what they can say because of big money, because of the demands, or they think the demands of big money, the assumption that you cannot really triumph in American politics without a gigantic amount of money behind you. And where do you get that money? You get it from the big corporations and the wealthy individuals and from Wall Street. That's the name of the game. One of the frustrating, perhaps most frustrating things I've experienced over my last, 40, 50 years around Democratic politics is that Democrats continue, when it comes down to it, to worry about what they call the suburban swing vote. That is the notion that these are the people who are college graduates, who are in the suburbs, who tend to move back and forth between Republicans and Democrats. But you see, by focusing on the suburban swing voters, Democrats are missing the vast majority of Americans who do want Medicare for all, who do want a higher minimum wage and paid sick leave and all of the other things that are basic, but also who want somebody who's fighting for them. And one final point. I think when it comes to voting for a president, the policies that some candidate puts out there, you know, Hillary Clinton had a policy for everything, and Kamala Harris had a lot of policies, and their policy books, and their policy lists, and their policies for this, and policies for that. I think most people don't any longer listen to policy. What they listen for is the tone of voice, the attitude, the degree to which somebody is going to, they feel, fight on their behalf. And unless somebody, a candidate, has that quality of being a fighter on behalf of average working people, on behalf of the working class, on behalf of the poor, on behalf of everyone, people are not listening to the policies. And unfortunately, Donald Trump is enough of a con man, and he's perfected the art of the con over so many years, that he gave Americans the impression that he was a fighter for them. No, he didn't. He won't. He's incapable. He doesn't. He thinks about nothing but his own ego, his own needs, his own power, his own money, his own fortune. Of course, he's a completely malignant narcissist. But Donald Trump at least is a con man enough to be able to convey this notion that he is a fighter on your behalf. And that's what people wanted. That's what they voted for.
Well, and we've been doing so many shows about this, Professor Reich. I mean, talking about money, there's a piece in the New York Times that everyone should read. This is just to think about the amount of money that was spent, how Kamala Harris burned through $1.5 billion in just 15 weeks. Her frenzied spending has led to second guessing among some Democrats and questions as she pressed for more cash since the election. This is by Shane Goldmacher. Professor Reich, when you look at some of the numbers, I mean, again, just to think that 90 million people in this country do not vote. We need to talk more about that. And also, I really don't like it when I hear in the media, well, half the country voted for Trump. That's not true. 90 million people, first of all, do not vote. So then we need to parse out the percentages from there. But voters under 30 did not show up like they did in 2020. According to the Associated Press, slightly more than 4 in 10 young voters went for Trump, up from about one-third in 2020. Fewer women voted for Kamala Harris this time as voted for Hillary Clinton in 2016, according to the United States Studies Center. And then look at what happened in California. Trump's share of votes rose by about 4 percentage points, according to the Chronicle. That growth seems to come from one demographic. Latino majority counties such as Fresno, Tulare, and San Benito saw some of the biggest shifts toward Trump. We're going to talk about the Latino vote next Tuesday. So, Professor Reich, I mean, Trump is gaining ground even in the most bluest parts of the country.
Well, yes, he is. And exactly why, I think what I've been talking about, Rose, is a big part of it. Many people, not, you know, the people who didn't vote, basically said to themselves, well, should I vote for a real first-class jerk, Donald Trump, or should I vote for the Democratic Party who doesn't care about me and is basically, you know, elitist? Well, I'm not going to vote. I mean, why should I bother? And then there were others who just voted for Trump and didn't vote down ballot because they said, well, he's my champion. Now, you and I here, you know, in the Bay Area, we can say, oh, this is ludicrous. But it is not ludicrous if you look at what has happened over the past 40 to 50 years to most Americans in terms of being essentially frozen out of the nation's prosperity. There's such a contrast between the first 30 years after the Second World War, when we grew the biggest middle class the world has ever seen. And most people understood that through their lifetimes, they would be doing better and better and better. They could afford to have a home of their own. They could afford to send their kids to college. If the kids wanted to, they didn't even have to go to college to have a good job. Their labor unions were strong. A third of Americans in the 1950s were members of labor unions, at least in the private sector. And we had a basic bargain in our country, that if you worked hard, if you played by the rules, you would do better and better and better, and your children would do even better than you. And then what happened? After the late 70s, early 1980s, after the Reagan administration, all of that collapsed. And what we've seen, again, is that for 45 years, most people in this country have not done better. The basic bargain has been basically ripped apart. And if the basic bargain is ripped apart, obviously people are going to say, well, I'm not going to vote. Or if I do vote, I'm going to vote for somebody who's going to shake up the system, somebody who just acts, well, acts like he's authentic. But even if he's not authentic, he's tough. He's a thug, but he's my thug. Bernie Sanders, remember how well Bernie Sanders did in 2016. In fact, I remember in 2015, when I was going around the country doing focus groups, people would say to me, after I asked, who are you attracted to? They would say to me, well, there are only two people in American politics that I am attracted to. One is Bernie Sanders, the other is Donald Trump. Right. And I would say back to them, that's ludicrous, because Donald Trump and Bernie Sanders live on different planets. But they would say back to me, you don't understand. These are people who are outside politics. They are not the establishment. They are going to shake things up. They're angry, like I'm angry. Hmm. Well, you know, the Democratic National Committee froze Bernie Sanders out. And I think a lot of that is the worry that a lot of big money had about Bernie Sanders, justifiably in their terms, because they didn't want somebody who was going to be raising taxes on them. They had the same reaction to Elizabeth Warren in 2020. So that the big money in the Democratic Party wanted somebody who was going to be controllable, who's not going to do anything in their view that was crazy, like raise taxes or a wealth tax. I mean, that's what they hate most of all. Donald Trump is their gift. That is the big money Republicans. They love Donald Trump because what Donald Trump is capable of doing, and they saw it before, is he makes us angry at each other. He divides America. So we don't look up and see where all the money and power has actually gone. Donald Trump is their con man. Donald Trump will continue tax breaks for the wealthy. He will give them whatever they want, but then he will turn our anger on immigrants, our anger on anybody who's different, on our anger on cultural topics and cultural villains, and the enemy within. He'll create so much tumult, so much chaos, so much. I mean, look at the people he's putting into, or he wants to put into power. You know, Matt Gaetz and Tulsi Gabbard and Robert F. Kennedy Jr. I mean, this is all a tumult. It's chaos. And the wealthy, behind the Republican Party, including Elon Musk, they celebrate. They say this is wonderful because people will not see what we are actually going to do. And that is, we're going to loot America. We are going to loot the country even more than we've done before.
We're going to take a quick break. Today, we're spending the hour with Robert Reich, co-founder of Inequality Media Civic Action, writer at robertreich.substack.com, author of many books, including The System, Who Rigged It, How to Fix It, Chancellor's Professor of Public Policy at UC Berkeley, and former Labor Secretary under Bill Clinton. And just a reminder, Bernie Sanders did win the primary in California. He landed 8 percentage points ahead of the second place finisher, Joe Biden. Before we go to break, we want to play one clip. This is Senator Sanders speaking recently on the New York Times podcast, The Daily.
In Missouri, you may have followed in this election, Missouri, a conservative state, 58% of the people voted to raise the minimum wage. Oh, by the way, we haven't been able to do that here in a democratically controlled U.S. Senate.
When those policies were in isolation on the ballot, separate from a Democratic Party and candidate carrying all the baggage that we're talking about here.
Well, the point is, if Democrats were focusing on those issues and saying, gee, how come not one Republican wants to raise the minimum wage to at least $15 an hour? How come one Republican doesn't believe that healthcare is a human right? How come one Republican doesn't want to expand Social Security so that the elderly people can live their lives with dignity? You put them on the defensive. But when you don't offer anything, you are on the defensive.
That was Senator Sanders on the New York Times podcast, The Daily. As he said, voters approved minimum wage increases to $15 an hour in Missouri and Alaska. Voters expanded workers' ability to earn paid sick leave in Alaska, Missouri, and Nebraska. We've been talking about the right to abortion measures that passed in 7 states, including Arizona, Montana, and Missouri. Voters rejected school vouchers in 3 states, Colorado, Kentucky, and Nebraska. Alaska voters opted to ban anti-union captive audience meetings. We didn't see this in California. A number of progressive policies did not pass, and we're going to talk about that on a future show. This is your call. If you'd like to join us, I'm sorry once again, our phone lines are having some problems, but you can email yourcall@kalw.org. We'll be back after this. This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Coming up tomorrow, because of Trump's victory, we are going to continue our series on Project 2025. After months of denying any connection to the Heritage Foundation-led authoritarian plan, Donald Trump is making his loyalties clear. Thursday, we'll discuss Separated, a new documentary about Trump's family separation plan last time and what we can expect. He just announced on his social media app that he is going to use the military for mass deportation. So we'll talk about that on Thursday. If you have a show idea or a guest idea, we'd also love to hear your thoughts about how you'd like us to cover the second Trump term. You can email yourcall@kalw.org. Today, we are talking about what happened on Election Day, how we got here, and the future of the Democratic Party with Robert Reich, Chancellor's Professor of Public Policy at UC Berkeley and former Labor Secretary under Bill Clinton. So we spend a lot of time sharing these numbers. Donald Trump getting 76.5 million votes, Kamala Harris getting 74 million votes. It's been 2 decades since a Republican won the popular vote. We would not be here right now if it weren't for the Electoral College. It's very interesting to look at the data. But what about the actual voters, people who did shift from, say, Obama to Trump, people who didn't vote at all? I've been watching a lot of these videos, and I thought this one was very interesting. New York Assemblymember and mayoral candidate Zohran Kwame Mamdani went to Queens and the Bronx to find out why working-class New Yorkers, these are all people of color, voted for Trump or did not vote at all.
Did you get a chance to vote on Tuesday?
I didn't vote.
And why did you not vote?
Because I don't believe in the system anymore.
And did you get a chance to vote on Tuesday?
Yes!
And who did you vote for?
Trump!
The million-dollar question. Trump.
Trump.
Donald Trump.
Well, actually, early voted. I voted for Trump.
Honestly, I didn't vote.
You voted for Trump.
She voted for Trump.
I voted for Trump.
I voted for Trump.
Me too.
Before I voted Democrat, at this moment, I voted Donald Trump.
Hillside Avenue in Queens and Fordham Road in the Bronx are two areas that saw the biggest shift towards Trump in last week's election. Even more residents didn't vote at all.
They like Trump because they don't want the Palestinian, the brothers, the killed. The war in Ukraine, the Democrats giving all the money and the war, this no good.
The swing is because people want lower prices. They probably believe that Trump will give them that.
Market price, all that.
Energy, gas.
La comida.
Food.
Most of these people are working families. They're working 1 to 2, 3 jobs, and rent is expensive. Foods are going up, utility bills are up.
And that's your hope, to see a little bit more of an affordable life?
Absolutely. What Trump did in the first 4 years, Fordham Road saw something where Kamala couldn't do that.
There were young voters who didn't vote for her because of the genocide, and I wouldn't have voted for her if I did, but I did vote for her, obviously, because I have common sense.
Can you tell me a little bit more about why you didn't vote?
Since you're out here, you know, Gaza, who should I vote?
Either side will go ahead, send bombs from here to kill my brothers and sisters.
Palestine issue, and then other issue is like Russia and then Ukraine. He stopped that war. That's why I bought him.
You can't say you're a Democrat and stand for the genocide that's going on in Gaza, period.
Practically, I like Democrat. I like Democrat, but I don't like this. Gaza, a lot of people have died.
Have you voted for Democrats in the past?
I have.
And what would it take for you to vote for a Democrat in the future?
Being able to pay attention to the regular Americans and their economic needs.
They should make economics the forefront of their campaign. People were not really feeling it in their pocket.
I voted for Hillary Clinton in 2016. I voted against Trump also in the 2018 midterms. Insulting us, playing on our emotions. All they do is shame you, and they just want to use like glitzy campaigns, and they get celebrities. And
like, if you're speaking the things that people want to hear about, I don't care what color you are, I'll vote for you.
That's New York Assemblymember and mayoral candidate Zohran Kwame Mamdani. He went to Queens and the Bronx to find out why working class New Yorkers, all people of color, voted for Trump or did not vote for all. You did hear one woman say she voted for Kamala Harris because she has common sense. Professor Reich, I thought this was so interesting. It's all people of color who are angry. They're angry about Gaza. They're angry about so much money being spent on weapons, the economy. What are your thoughts on what we just heard there?
Well, I think it's a representative, even though it's in New York City, but it's a good representative sample of what I hear and what is going on, I imagine, around the country. But instead of thinking about people as blocks of identities, you know, black people or poor people or New Yorkers, I think it might be more helpful for the purpose of understanding the anatomy of what happened and what we must do to go forward, to think of people in terms of where they are in the pecking order, class. We don't talk about class. You know, the Democrats don't like to talk about class, nor do Republicans. But if we don't recognize the reality of class and also the fact that we have in America an establishment. We have people who are wealthy and they are powerful, and wealth and power go together. If we don't acknowledge that, we don't understand what's happening. So many of the people in the recording you just shared with us, Rose, talked about, I don't trust the system. Well, if they don't trust the system, what they're really saying is, I don't trust the establishment. I no longer feel that they are looking out for me. We have an establishment that is actually moving in one direction and leaving me behind, or maybe refusing even to recognize my legitimacy, or not respecting me, or not giving me the status and the money I need and I deserve. I think that's really what is going on, and it's been going on not just the past campaign, not just the past administration, but it's been going on for 40 years, and it's getting worse and worse because the establishment, that is the people with money and power, and again, money and power are the same thing in modern America. The people with great money and power, they are not listening, and they are accumulating more and more money and more power. So obviously something's got to give. The Republicans offered this time, and Donald Trump in 2016 did the same thing, offered an explanation and also offered an alternative. The explanation is the establishment is not listening to you. The alternative is I'm going to take a wrecking ball to the system. He's already doing that in 2024. But the Democrats have not provided an alternative anti-establishment message. The Democrats should and could say, the people with wealth and power are not listening to you. And that's wrong. And we Democrats really, in the tradition of Franklin D. Roosevelt, the tradition of even Harry Truman and John F. Kennedy, what we Democrats are going to do is we are going to change fundamentally the direction of the party. Instead of just giving out more benefits to the rich, instead of enabling more trade and more outsourcing of big corporations, and instead of subsidizing and bankrolling of big corporations the way we have done and have allowed to be done in this country, we are actually going to become the party of the people. Of the people, not the powerful, but the people. We're going to empower the people. No more bank bailouts. No more bailouts for the wealthy. No more tax breaks. No more special tax breaks for the carried interest people, the hedge fund people, the private equity people. No, we Democrats are going to be the people, and we're going to return to our roots. That is the only way forward, Rose. That is the only way Democrats can win again.
To add to what you're saying, Professor Reich, an article just came out yesterday in the New York Times by Claire Fahey. 1 in 8 New York City public school students was homeless last year. A record 146,000 students did not have permanent housing. And then going to the Poor People's Campaign, we did a few shows about the Poor People's Campaign. 140 million poor and low-income people live in the United States, but you rarely hear the words poor or poverty in the media dialogue and from politicians. Okay, so given all of that, Professor Reich, do you think, given that the Democratic Party is so connected to the ultra-wealthy, and there's articles about the role that Mark Cuban played, about the role that Uber's Tony West played in Kamala Harris's campaign. He's married to her sister, and so many others. Is it possible to reform the Democratic Party?
That is the hardest question you could possibly ask, Rose. And on certain days of the week, I say yes to myself. On other days of the week, I say, no, it's not reformable. It can't be reformed. It's too entrenched. It's too tied to the wealthy. Now, there's going to be a decision made pretty soon about who the next chairman of the Democratic National Committee is going to be. The instinct of those in the party who are most tied to big money, and those are the people who have most power in the Democratic National Committee, they want somebody like, say, Rahm Emanuel, because he is a big money guy. He can raise the money. But if the Democrats want to have a future that has anything to do with the poor and the working class and the middle class, instead of the wealthy, what they have to do is change the structure of the party entirely. Is this enough of a shock, this loss, to enable them to do that? Well, I don't know. The moneyed interests in the party keep on saying, well, it wasn't that much of a loss. It's really a tiny loss, just a few votes. We can get them back. It was just a tactical mistake here and there. She only had 3 months. But others in the party, other voices, like Bernie Sanders and yours truly, say, no, that it's not just a matter of small tactical changes. It's a matter of underlying philosophy and structure. It's a matter of changing the entire alignment of the Democratic Party. And the future of the Democratic Party is not with the moneyed interests that are getting richer and richer. We have 820 billionaires in this country now. Billionaires. Each of them has $1,000 million. And That's the least of it. Again, Elon Musk has $370 billion. And the second richest man, you know, these are people who we, some of us have met, we know about, you know, they are around, a lot of them California. Jeff Bezos owns the Washington Post and told the Post that it could not endorse Kamala Harris. And Elon Musk is using his entire Twitter X platform to broadcast now lies and continues to do it. It's the most cynical operation you can imagine. If the Democrats don't become a populist party, but economic populism, not the Republicans' sham form of cultural populism, but economic populism, then I don't see a future for the Democratic Party, Rose.
Today, we're speaking with Professor Robert Reich, co-founder of Inequality Media Civic Action. You can find his pieces at robertreich.substack.com. He is Chancellor's Professor of Public Policy at UC Berkeley and former Labor Secretary under Bill Clinton. You can email us yourcall@kalw.org. We have an email from Adrian who says, I'd love to hear your thoughts on the massive right-wing media machine coupled with the erosion of legacy news sources and how this has led to, quote, regular people not even hearing progressive messaging. This is such an important one that we've been talking about, Professor Reich. And there's a new study out from the Pew Knight Initiative, and they found that, you know, people who go on Facebook lean very right. I mean, again, I don't like these left and right terms, but this is important. Instagram, 30% right, 25 left. And then YouTube, same. TikTok, a little more to the left. But people, the media ecosphere has changed so drastically. Professor Reich, you're co-founder of Inequality Media Civic Action. You put out videos on a regular basis. What are your thoughts about how we're living now more in even smaller silos because of how people get their news?
Well, it's a huge problem. In a democracy, obviously, how people get their news and what they understand to be the truth is fundamental. And when you have Rupert Murdoch, you know, with his Fox News and his New York Post and his Wall Street Journal, polluting the public space, and you have Elon Musk with his X polluting the internet space, and when all of this drivel and these lies, these weaponized lies, are taking over people's heads, obviously democracy has not a chance. It cannot work. And Murdoch and Musk and others like them are becoming more and more powerful. I mentioned Jeff Bezos and the Washington Post a moment ago. Well, they're in again, and the Los Angeles Times and the billionaire owner of the Times that would not allow the Los Angeles Times to endorse Kamala Harris. It's not just the endorsements. What we're talking about here is the facts. It's truth. It's analysis. It's making sure people get the truth. Now, I don't know. Adrian asks, I think, a very fundamental question. Well, you know, what is going to happen to our democracy if the so-called right-wing media continues to dominate? And I haven't even mentioned the right-wing radio, which is becoming more and more, you know, the Sinclair radio stations and their imitators, they're becoming larger and larger and larger. The lies are becoming bolder. I think the only thing that we can do as recipients of these lies is reject them. Boycott X. Boycott all of these sources of lies, Fox News, the advertisers on Fox News, the advertisers on X. Make sure that we are using and getting information that is useful and true. And, even mean, I people ask me all the time, what do I read every day? Well, the fact of the matter is, the first thing I read is The Guardian. It's not even a United States-based publication, but it has a United States issue. I think The Guardian is a wonderful paper. It's very, very useful. It covers ground, and it's not a corporate paper. It doesn't totally depend on advertising. It's the kind of source that I think is important. And the reason that I founded, co-founded Inequality Media Civic Action to put out videos is because I know that young people tend to be more moved, and you can reach them more easily through video than you can through print media. But Rose, I'm still very worried about people getting the right information. We're not teaching in our schools as much as we should critical thinking. And by critical thinking, I mean the ability to say, no, that can't be right. That doesn't make sense. That analysis is so inconsistent with everything else I know. Let me think that through. Critical thinking. You can't have a democracy unless you have people capable of critical thought.
We're getting a lot of emails. People are just really wanting to sound off. And once we have our phone lines fixed, I would love to hear just how people are doing and then how you want us to cover the second Trump turn. So I just want to read a couple and then you can comment. And again, thank you for your email, Adrian. Judith writes, what does Professor Reich think of the so-called social issues? I think many Trump voters sadly would shun Bernie's stand on rights for LGBTQ people. Also, there is the wrong but potent connection between religion and women's rights. We've been through a bad period of inflation. How much wealth was transferred from Main Street to Wall Street? We've got a couple others about affordable housing. Eileen says, Fortune magazine had this headline, the housing market's affordability crisis gave Trump a big boost at the polls. And then Kevin writes, I and many, many in my universe are disgusted with the Biden-Harris administration's unconditional funding, arming, and support of the genocide in Gaza. It's despicable, and I'm ashamed of all of my elected officials. Harris lost Michigan because of Arab and Palestinian voters staying home or voting for Trump. Jordan says, did Professor Reich see Kamala Harris's CNN interview? First question was, what will you do on day one? Didn't answer the question, was given a second chance, still nothing. Then they returned to Tim Walz, nothing there either. Trump articulated exactly what he wanted to do. And then we've got a couple emails, Professor Reich, from people saying, is the solution to build a third party? What are your thoughts?
Eventually, if the Democrats don't see the light, don't become an anti-establishment party of the people, we may have to build a third party. But it's hard to do that in a winner-take-all system because third parties really often take away voters from the party that's closest associated with them in terms of values. But let's start, if we can, Rose, with Judith's point that the social issues predominated, issues of transgender children and whether they should get care and religion and LGBTQ plus people. Let me just say that what Trump and the Trump Republicans have been doing for years is using social issues to divide us. And so that we don't, as I said before, we don't look up and see where the power and the wealth actually are. Now, there is a big difference in this country in terms of, let's say, abortion rights. I don't think there's any question Democrats should be supporting a woman's rights over her body. One out of three women of childbearing age these days, because of Trump's Supreme Court, now are being forced. They don't have a chance to have an abortion. They're living in a place that does not allow them any reasonable chance of having an abortion. We're living in a kind of a land of forced birth I mean, it's a terrible way of saying it, but that's actually what's happening. LGBTQ plus people deserve protection, obviously, and what people do in their bedrooms and what people do in terms of their the most intimate aspects of their lives, the people they love and the people they care about, is no business of government at all. But you see, this is what the Republicans, the Trump Republicans, have done. They've taken private morality and made it into a public issue, and they have dispensed with all discussion of public morality in terms of the bribery of politicians, the corruption of our system with big money, the ability of people on Wall Street to get inside information on what's going to happen to industries before anybody else gets it, so they can make even more money. The monopolization of our industries. These are matters of public morality that the Republicans don't want to talk about. Well, Democrats must talk about them, because otherwise, they will never be heard. Another one of your callers, or somebody who contacted you.
And we have about a minute left.
You have a minute. Okay. Inflation. Yes, inflation was a problem, but it was a major problem because the economy desperately needed more, and people needed help during the pandemic. And thank goodness Biden and the Biden administration came to people's aid. We cut child poverty in half. That's a good thing. It's not a bad thing. And then the Fed clamped down, raised interest rates. I understand that. We should be celebrating the fact that we basically now have no inflation, but the price of groceries, the price of housing, the price of education is still out of reach for many people. Mm-hmm. So let me, in the 5 seconds we have left, just say the Democrats have an opportunity here. We have an opportunity. If they don't take it, shame on them. Shame on us. Mm-hmm.
Robert Reich is co-founder of Inequality Media Civic Action. He writes at robertreich.substack.com. He's the author of many books, Chancellor's Professor of Public Policy at UC Berkeley and former Labor Secretary under Bill Clinton. Thank you so much, Professor Reich. We'd love to have you back.
Thank you.
Thank you. And thank you for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's your call.